and welcome to the Powered On podcast, the podcast that explores the topics that are having the biggest impact on the electrical industry. I'm Jordan O'Brien, the editor of Electrical Review, and as ever, I am joined by Kayleigh Hutchins, editor of Data Center Review. Welcome back, Kayleigh.
Hello, hello. So last episode, if you remember, we spoke at length about the skills crisis and its impact on the electrical industry. And as promised, we have an expert guest here with us in the studio, don't we, Jordan?
Yes, this week we're going to discuss that in a bit more detail, and we're joined by Andrew Eldred, Director of Workforce and Public Affairs at the Electrical Contractors Association. Welcome to the podcast, Andrew.
Thank you very much, Jordan. Thank you, Kayleigh.
So we want to kick off with asking a really quite general question, but to really get the backstory on this is, what is the extent of the skills gap in the electrical industry?
I think the short answer is that nobody really knows. If you're looking for a number, I would warn you, if somebody gives you a number, they're probably lying. It is very difficult to establish because we're dealing with so many unknowns. And when we get numbers, once you cross-examine them, you realize that the people are counting one thing, they're not counting another. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to reconcile all the different estimates. So, for example, Construction Industry Training Board, which does a lot of research, they would say, just looking at electricians, and I'm principally going to look at electricians here, so apologies, you know, to fire and security specialists or professional engineers, I'm just going to talk about electricians. They reckon, I think, in their latest estimate, that we're about 3,500 recruits a year short. That's almost certainly an underestimate. They tend to look at new build construction. They've got not a lot of awareness of some of the other things that electricians and electrical industry does. So that's a number which is probably a bit lower than it needs to be. My own organization, ECA, says in the UK we probably need to recruit 12,000 apprentices a year. On average, we're recruiting maybe 7,000 or 8,000 a year. So you've got a not a dissimilar figure there of about 4,000, 4,500 short. But that is a figure for maintaining the workforce at existing levels. And of course, as we know, on the electrical side and the broader electrotechnical side, we're almost certainly facing growth. Although if you look again at the CITB numbers, they're predicting the number of electricians to grow down. So it's a very puzzling figure. I think probably what I would say to try and help make some sense of it, though, is that we know we are short of people. We know it's a pretty big number, but I don't think it's such a big number that it's impossible. I mean, we have 230,000 electricians, electrical fitters. That's what the National Statistics Office calls us. 230,000 of them. I think we're short of a few thousand a year in terms of on top of what we're currently recruiting. Once you look at the numbers and the level of interest of people wanting to join the industry but not able to, if we sort out those pipelines more efficiently, I think it's doable. It's not an impossible task.
According to the recent ECA survey that highlighted the ongoing labor shortages, companies seem really worried about it. They cite it as their main concern. That's up from 32% last year. And given that constant growth, have we reached the peak of the skill shortage? Or do you think that it's going to continue to be a problem for quite some time?
It largely depends on what we do now. There are signs, there are always ups and downs. We all know that. I mean, for example, at the moment, there are reports that the new build housing market is cooling down. And so businesses in that area, if you spoke to them separately from everybody else, would probably say, well, in our particular area, the skills shortages are relenting, or indeed we may even have a skills surplus at the moment. Meanwhile, of course, there are other areas that are booming. I mean, the other aspect of this that we haven't talked about yet is differences locally. There are huge differences at the moment in the numbers of electricians living in one area or another. the county in England that's got the highest population of electricians per head of population is probably not the one you expect. It's Dorset. Dorset has the highest per capita population of electricians in England. The place with the lowest is Surrey, and everywhere else sort of falls somewhere in between.
I mean, this is again, it's going to be one of those very broad questions that's difficult to answer. But what do you think really were the kind of the root causes of the shortage and where we've got today? And kind of the last few years have been lots of things. We've had Brexit, we've had the COVID pandemic. How has it kind of evolved over these last few years?
I guess the first point to make, complaining about skill shortages is nothing new. And I've certainly seen, you know, records going back 100 years where, mm-hmm. you know, people are complaining about not having enough properly qualified electricians. Yeah. So there's nothing new in that. There's no sort of, I don't think there was ever a golden age that we have sort of declined from. But on the other hand, I think you make a valid point, Kayleigh, which is that I think we're probably in a worse position than maybe we have been before. Mm-hmm. And we're certainly not in an ideal position overall. So what's made it worse? And I think probably there have been some things that have made it worse. No doubt, I do see some truth in the complaint that, you know, schools and careers advice, much more so than in the past, has steered people away from trade occupations. Foolishly and counterproductively, as it turns out, because, you know, the kind of money you can make, the kind of progression you can get through, you know, becoming an electrician compares very favorably yes. to what people who go to university mm-hmm. End mm-hmm. up with. So I accept that. And I think increasingly government and others accept that. I think we've also got to face up to the fact that that there are elements of the education system that are not working as well as they should. And this, to a certain extent, contradicts what I've just said. Because when you look at the number of people wanting to join the industry, so I've just said to you, not enough people probably want to join the industry, or perhaps not enough people of the right caliber. But if you look at the numbers wanting to join the industry, as opposed to those who get a start, say, as an apprentice, there are three or four times more people wanting to join the industry than actually get an apprentice start. So you compare, in England, we had a better than average, we've had two higher than average years in terms of apprentice places. So 7,500 the year before last, around 7,000 this year. So that's a good 25, 50% higher than the number of apprentice starts in England previously. It's still three times less than the number of people who've been enrolling on college courses in electrical. So 7,500 electrical apprentices, absolute boom year. The same year, 20,000 started college courses. At least some interest in the industry, but barely 10% of those who study electrical actually then progress into an apprenticeship. There's a terrible falling off there. I don't believe that's because they don't want to progress. I think that's because one reason or another, they're not able to progress, mm-hmm. Many of them. So we've got an issue there in terms of the barriers between, if you like, full-time education, because those studying just in college, I'm not talking about apprentices studying in college, and those just in college, they seem to be struggling then to progress. Finally, then, ultimately, I think the industry has got to take some of the blame, because at the same time as the industry is complaining about skills shortages, we're still obviously not taking on all the people that potentially we could. So there aren't enough employers taking on enough apprentices. And you know, we could spend the rest of the podcast talking about why that is. But certainly a couple of things that I'd point to. Number one, the structure of the industry has changed. We have fewer large companies, and we've also got fewer middle-sized companies. We've got far more very, very small companies, and that latter group tend to be less likely to take on apprentices because of the obligations that come with that and the costs that come with that. Another aspect, in certain parts of the country, particularly in London, but also in some of the other big cities, it's got a lot of contractors who don't employ anybody. Or in other words, they subcontract a lot of the work or use agencies. Now, if you don't employ anybody, you don't train anybody. And that's why you do tend to find in those cities a much lower level of apprentice recruitment than elsewhere. And there is a direct relationship, it's been proven, there is a direct relationship between the levels of self-employment, construction self-employment in an area, that has an inverse relationship with the number of apprentices being recruited. If you've got a large dependence upon subcontracting, on agency working, on self-employment, you will have a lower level of apprentice recruitment.
I mean, I want to go back, if I may. I know you just discussed about how perhaps the training and education is where it's supposed to be. And I know we discussed this last week, Jordan and myself, about how we were at school, and that it certainly wasn't put to us as a viable option. We were absolutely told, go to university, that's where your career lies, that's where you'll go. So in terms of government intervention and what the government should be doing, how critical do you think government intervention is in addressing the shortage we have? And what could they be doing to make training and education more conducive to getting younger people into the industry?
Well, first of all, I think they need to recognise that it's a problem and that's important.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, I think they actually need to engage with industry properly. We've had many generations of politicians and civil servants who feel more comfortable talking to larger businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Have very little understanding of smaller businesses. And whether they like it or not, if we're talking about electrical, if we're talking about broader engineering services, plumbing and so on, if we're talking about who the people are who are going to deliver net zero and a lot of the smart technologies as well, it's small business sectors like electrical.
Yeah.
So they need to stop talking through proxies and intermediaries and start talking to the industry directly. I think it's not for government to set, you know, what the standard is for competence for training in a particular discipline. They don't understand it. The people who understand it, the people who do it. So as we have in other parts of the world, particularly in Europe, I think there should be greater emphasis on industries themselves being entrusted with defining what the standard is. And I think electrical, to a certain extent, for some of the reasons I've already given, has been more successful at that. And that is why apprenticeships are stronger than they are. And why we've also made efforts to ensure that other routes, whether that be through college, whether that be through experienced worker routes and so on, also align to the same standard. So that's not for government. And often when government does try to set standards like that, they get it wrong, they undermine it. Where government can come in is in terms of funding it and funding it properly. It's one thing to have an apprenticeship. It's another thing to ensure that that is being offered to employers and learners everywhere that it needs to be and is being delivered to the right standard and to the right quality. So we haven't talked about it up till now, but I would say that the underfunding of apprenticeships and further education is a big part of the problem, because it is difficult for a provider to make money or even break even in delivering apprenticeships, particularly long apprenticeships such as an electrician or a plumber. And that is why I think we've seen a lot of the colleges orientating away from delivering apprenticeships towards delivering full-time courses with very low levels of progression from the full-time course into the apprenticeship or into the work experience, then it allows you to qualify fully as an electrician. If you study just at college, you're not even halfway there. So I think if it were properly funded, if colleges were able to attract and retain staff of the caliber that you need to deliver the apprenticeship, then that's an important part of it. One other thing I think we probably need to do, given the way that the structure of the industry has changed, given that you have fewer larger companies, fewer medium-sized companies, is you need to provide more incentives to the very smallest companies to take on an apprentice, indeed probably take on their first apprentice. Electrical apprentices can prove very profitable for companies, but up front, for the first year or two, there's a lot of upfront cost. There's a lot of support that the apprentice will need, supervision, mentoring, and so on. That's a lot more difficult for a very small company, for a micro business to provide, than it is for a medium or a larger size business. So why not provide that support, targeted support, not to all employers, but specifically to those employers who need the support, those at the smaller end, because they are such a large proportion of the overall population of companies that we have in the industry now. If you can get to more of them, then that in itself will help drive up the numbers very significantly.
So would you argue that the problem isn't necessarily the demand from young people getting into the industry, it's more the availability because the government aren't funding apprenticeships or making it easier to choose that path? Because we discussed it slightly on the last episode where the IET went so far as to say that we need to foster people getting into these industries, especially the electrical industry, at a younger age. So improving the national curriculum, so subjects such as design and technology, more fit with the needs of the nation rather than, you know, potentially more looking at metalworking and woodworking, but also the electrical side.
It's all very true that all of those things need to be done. And I know the IET are very active in terms of schools engagement. And I would say that our members, ECA members, would agree that if we can appeal more to the higher caliber learners, then the overall caliber of the people coming through will improve. But I return to the numbers. Mm. It's not just about that. It's also about ensuring that people, once they've made that decision, and I've already said to you, tens of thousands of people make that decision every year, at least provisionally, that they want to look in it more and develop and maybe progress. The system is not providing the support that those people need. So by all means, absolutely, better communication, better careers advice, better awareness amongst teachers, amongst careers advisors, amongst parents, all the influencers, absolutely. The way in which the industry can be portrayed needs to be so much more positive and so much better than has been the case. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But we've also got to grapple with a technical education system which is broken, quite frankly. The degree of waste that goes on with people starting courses, completing courses, we haven't even talked about T-levels yet, hundreds, thousands of people starting every year, tens of thousands of people, and they find at the end of it that they're stuck. When you talk to ECA members, they will not say to you, there aren't enough people contacting me about the potential for employment. If anything, they will say, I'm bombarded with people, but unfortunately, they don't have the qualifications that I need in order to employ them. So we need to provide stronger progression, a more structured progression route for people moving from college then into an accelerated apprenticeship or some other form of completing that training.
Would you say that CPD also has a place in ensuring that we're not just relying on a new generation, but also making sure that the current generation has the skills necessary to deliver something like net zero, which the electrical industry is going to be like paramount to delivering. Without the electrical industry, there is no net zero. So how important would you say CPD is?
It is very important. This is the way we're going anyway. The old sort of saying of qualify once and practice forever is becoming less and less tenable. We've got, off the back of Grenfell Tower, a lot of work going on at every part of the construction industry at defining a process for maintaining competence and then revalidating competence. We're not there yet, but we soon will be. So there will be an expectation there. I think within the electrical industry, we're almost certainly in a better place than most. Obviously, CPD is one of the things that competent person schemes and other certification providers will look at when assessing the competence of those that they're inspecting. So that's important. It's pretty common, almost universal, I would say, for individuals to keep up to date, at least with something like the wiring regulations. Very high levels of people sit 18th edition, have sat the 18th edition courses and indeed attend updates as well. So absolutely. But two other things I'd say about CPD. One is this, just going back to that figure I came up with at the beginning, 230,000 electricians and electrical fitters. Now, I understand that of those 230,000, 40,000, their highest qualification is level 2 or below. Now, how do you square that? Electrician, level 3, level 2 or below. There are very significant numbers of people practicing at the moment who don't actually meet the full qualification requirements. Now, that becomes an issue when it comes to net zero, because when it comes to net zero, the upskilling qualifications in EV, in batteries and so on, increasingly the pre-entry requirements will say you've got to meet the pre-entry, you've got to meet the qualifying requirements of a fully qualified electrician. So CPD for that group, I would suggest, includes something a bit more ambitious, which you might even call upskilling. There is now the possibility through experienced worker routes, both general experienced worker route, but also now the domestic electrician experienced worker route, which is aligned with the domestic apprenticeship that I asked earlier. It is possible for those who lack the qualifications but have the experience to go to a process of having that experience validated and their competence validated against the same standard. And then that opens the door to them then to take on the upskilling qualifications in EV, batteries, solar, and so on. So that's one area of significant CPD that I think there's a big opportunity around. The other one, just a sort of a final thought, links back to support for young people. One of the issues, as I already mentioned, that colleges and independent training providers have got is in recruiting and retaining staff. They need to recruit and retain people who are occupationally competent. So effectively, they're competing for electricians, for plumbers with industry. That's very difficult for them to do. One of the ways in which a business owner or an employer, one of the ways they can do to support the colleges is maybe considering taking some of their supervisors, some of the people who mentor their apprentices at the moment, and actually get them trained up to be assessors themselves. So not all of the assessment has to be done by people directly employed by the college. You can do some of that assessment in-house. Obviously, there are rules there around conflict and so on, and in maintaining the integrity of the process. But that is another additional bit of CPD that I know local colleges will assist, both in terms of funding and in terms of delivering the training that's required for that. So a couple of extra bits of CPD that people could consider, A, in terms of contributing to progress on net zero, but also indeed coming back to our previous point about supporting younger people.
Andrew, I feel like we could pick your brain about this for hours, but unfortunately we are constrained to half an hour for our podcast. So I'm going to have to sort of wrap things up there. But firstly, we just want to thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your insight with us, because it's been fantastically informative and given us a much wider sort of idea of what's going on in the industry.
Yeah, as you understand, as you said, this isn't a once in a generation thing. It's a problem that's going to constantly evolve, and it's hopefully one that we can get on top of and not have it in this cyclical manner in the future, especially given the growing importance of the electrical industry in the UK to achieve things like net zero. So hopefully someone is out there listening and will implement some of the changes that you suggested to just fix these problems.
Just being a bit more upbeat, I think the answer, Jordan, is that more people are listening. I think net zero has focused minds. And to be fair, you asked an earlier question, what can government do? I think setting strategic targets, strategic objectives, it helped concentrate minds, but what we need to do now is to move from the strategic target and objective and actually working out through the nuts and bolts of how we get there. I think we will get there, but it needs quite a lot of work.
Well, once again, Andrew, thank you so much for joining us today. We've really enjoyed having you on the show, and we'd like to thank you on behalf of all of our listeners.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode of the podcast, where we'll be following a similar format to the rest of this season, where it will just be Kaylee and I, and then another week after that, we'll follow with a guest. Of course, you can continue your own journey in the electrical industry by improving your skills through our CPD Week initiative. You can learn more about that over on the CPD Week website. But for now, that's all from Kaylee and I this week. Thank you very much.